Welcome to another session, another radio zine here on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. And this morning we have a very special guest. We have the host of our only vegan focused program, that is That Vegan Show, broadcast every fourth Friday at 11 a.m. And we have Melissa Lesniak, who is the host and producer of this very unique show. Very glad to have her here with us. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, Ender. Thanks for having me here. And I'm very honored to be interviewed, be on the other side of the interview, and to be part of KBOO.
Well, we're so, so happy to have you. And let's just go. Jump on this boat, this radio zine boat this morning. Tell us about yourself. Who are you? What do you do?
All right. Well, I feel like I have a lot of interest. As far as career-wise, I've come from a psychology background in mental health and then moved into education. And I also have some background in nutrition. So thinking about combining all of that at some point to, you know, provide more holistic services to people. I'm also very interested in music, and that partially that, and my grandfather, who did some radio when he was in the Army, led me to being a really big fan of Army, or not of, of radio. So that's some of where I got my interest in radio from.
Okay. And again, your name is Melissa Lesniak, and you're the host and producer of our only vegan focus show on KBOO right now, That Vegan Show. Again, people, wonderful program, broadcast every fourth Friday of the month at 11 a.m. And of course, it has archives that you can find on kboo.fm/thatveganshow. And so please tell us why and how you came to have your show, which again is unique at KBOO.
Yeah, I've been interested in radio for a while, and back in the 90s when I was in grad school, I had a music radio show, and then when I was working at a university, about 10, 11 years ago, I noticed they had a college radio show, so I was like, great, I can have that show again. And then after I was running my music show for a while, having a vegan talk show was kind of rolling around in my head somewhere, and one day I just realized, hey, I could put this together and do this. So some of the other radio personalities and people who worked at the station helped me develop a format, which I'm really excited, you know, was excited about and thankful for, and just kind of took off from there.
Well, that is wonderful. I think that what I always say is that here at KBOO, we do the very least that we do is the most basic form of activism, which is speaking about issues that are important to us. And that's what we do here. One of the main things that we do here. Very glad to have you produce this very unique show. And again, you know, the first question, why support veganism?
Yeah, I mean, I've been passionate about animals for a long time, and it took a few tries to become fully vegan, and that's part of the reason I'm really try to be patient with people and meet them where they are. But it just I had seen some animal cruelty type of brochures at some concerts that I had been at, and you know, that just bothered me. And then I got interested in cooking and was cutting up a chicken, and that really bothered me. So it was just kind of gradually some of these pieces came together, and I was like, no, I don't want to harm animals. And, you know, it just kind of finally clicked for me that I don't want to be part of harming animals, especially if I don't need to be.
Yeah, I think that's the main reason that most people have to embrace veganism is that, well, basically, you would say that you are sensitive to animals suffering, you know?
Yeah.
Right? I think the majority of people have the tendency to block it out because it's difficult. You know, I think that people do that a lot with everything, really. If it's too ugly, then they'll simply look the other way and not think about it, not talk about it because it's too hard. Would you say that's
yeah. True? Yeah, I mean, I'm very sensitive. So it's to a lot of things, to like other people's energy, to suffering. Like if I see someone on TV who I can tell is suffering and they're crying, I'm going to start crying. I'm just a very sensitive person. So I wonder if, you know, when you're younger, you think everyone's the same as you. And then as you get older, you realize that, no, they're not everyone necessarily feels that way. So, yeah, I guess I wonder if people aren't as sensitive to everything as I am, if that makes it easier to block out the pain of animals. I'm not sure. It's hard for me to understand because I think a lot of people love certain animals and feel very upset if they find out those animals are being harmed.
Wow, that's a good point right there. I think that I will say, and again, you know, my name is Ender. I work here at KBOOM, Public Affairs Director. Such a pleasure to have Melissa here with us for this radio zine. And hey, I'm a vegan too. So maybe that's one of the reasons why I'm such a fan of your show and your work for this station. And I have to say that I believe that most people are sensitive. It's just that maybe most people don't want to embrace the feelings because that part is hard. And I feel the same way as you do a lot of the time, you know? And I think we're talking about other things right now, but it's all related to the whole adventure of being, of, you know, not consuming animal products in a society that, well, does. And so it really, it makes you feel, I don't know if you would agree with that, but you probably feel a little isolated sometimes, right? Like, wow, I'm an alien, right? would you say that's the case?
Sometimes I do. Moving to Portland has helped a lot. I do feel even the people who are not vegan are very accepting of it for the most part. So that has been nice. And I, you know, I did kind of get tired of feeling like being a pioneer. At one point, I just was like, I want to be around, you know, my people for a while. It's, you know, as humans, we need that kind of connection.
Yeah, and you said something. Where are you from?
I'm from St. Louis.
St. Louis, Missouri.
Yes.
And, well, I guess you moved here for many reasons. Mm-hmm. We're so glad to have you here. And I'll second that, what you just said. I feel very, well, kind of like I live in the right place.
Right.
I don't know if I would like to move anywhere else for now. Although we could say that the West Coast in general, you know, the main cities like L.A.
Right.
And San Francisco and Portland. And even, you know, Seattle as well, you know, you can find kind of like the same vibe of acceptance. Although if you look up on the internet, you know, Portland is always number one in vegan cities. So, hey, that's something to feel proud about. Maybe that's why we're so comfortable here. But back to why people become vegan and how difficult it can be to some because of how our society historically has been. This relationship with animals that people have had for many, many, many years. It takes me back to my next question, and then we can go ahead and, you know, talk about different things. But why are animals important to you?
I think I, you know, view animals as, I don't view like I have dominion over them. You know, they are part of our world and part of our earth, and you know, I don't feel like I have the right to take their lives or to create animals and then treat them poorly and then take their lives just because I'm a human. And I mean, that is what I hear from some people, that like we're the top of the food chain or the animals are bred for that. Like that, I'm like, okay, I don't get it. But it's, you know, the cognitive dissonance people have. Well, those, you know, animals are bred for that, but not, you know, cats and dogs, we don't want to do anything to, you know, animal abuse type things to them. So I just don't see the distinction. I feel like all animals, I'm very upset about when I think about how they're treated. Like the first time I found out how many billions of turkeys were killed for Thanksgiving, I ended up crying for like 20 minutes because I just, it just was a staggering number for that one day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is definitely an awful situation, and something that a lot of people don't want to see again because, you know, it's hard. And I do believe that most people, because things are hard, they just prefer to, you know, look the other way and do something else because it's too hard and they mm-hmm. feel powerless as to how to change it. And I love what you said about animals being kind of equal, you mm-hmm. know, to us in your eyes, because that's what I believe. That's what many people I know believe. And I even, you know, I throw the term our fellow beings mm-hmm. very often, kind of like a reminder to people that that's what I believe, that our fellow animals are our fellow beings. We're sharing this place together. And although, you know, people have had a relationship with animals since time immemorial, the way we have it today, it's a very different situation. It's a very scary and completely, I mean, you could say unethical situation that mm-hmm. we have, which takes me to my next point. My next point is, again, your thoughts on ethics and morals in regards to foods, but specifically our factory farm food system, which is something that, I mean, it's beyond words, what it means and what it is, what it does. Please tell us about that and how that informs your veganism, your activism, and even your feelings about the situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so disturbing to think about what they're doing to these animals, especially behind closed doors. You know, they purposefully hide it. They purposefully, I've even heard from some of my radio shows, started having like the animal trucks come at night because they were disturbing people. You know, like if you're driving down the highway and you see a truck full of animals they're taking for slaughter. You know, they're just so manipulative about hiding what's really going on to us. Because it is such a terrible way they're treating these animals and making them suffer their whole lives before killing them at the end. So, yeah, it's so hard to think about, especially like I was saying earlier, I'm so sensitive and I can mm-hmm. really feel that deeply. And it's hard for me to understand how other people don't see that. And I think to your point about doing difficult things, this is maybe a little tangential, but something I've been thinking about lately, that, you know, all of us need to start having more difficult conversations, you know, coming out of that cancel culture. We need to listen to each other, even if we're not on the same page, and it's going to be uncomfortable situations, but that's what we need to be moving into, and not just saying, oh, you don't agree with me 100%. Well, I'm just never going to talk to you again, kind mm-hmm. of thing. So, mm-hmm. I think hopefully as, you know, humans, we're starting to realize that's where we need to get to.
Yeah. And this is a big fight because it's not just people doing the right thing and the other people being checked out and unwillingly or unconsciously right. or automatically doing the wrong thing by supporting all these endeavors like factory food, you know, factory farms and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about governmental agencies
right.
that support this process. We have mm-hmm. this Department of Agriculture, well, not that one, but the Department of Fish and Wildlife, which yes. is supposed to be about protecting wildlife. And it's not. It really is about protecting agriculture. And they even said mm-hmm. on their website. So we have these institutions that govern this country that is supposed to be the most advanced and the best country in the world, apparently. That's what we all think, right? That's what people in the world think. And we still have these outdated, what we could consider outdated mm-hmm. and backwards mechanisms. Like, for example, like how come almond milk can be like so much more expensive than cow milk when cows are these massive beings, massive creatures that require so much
right.
food and space and attention? And how come they get all these cuts? So they're, you know, it's so complicated. It almost seems like we're all being set up to fail since the beginning, you know? And how do you tackle that, knowing that this is a lot more than just convincing people like us that this is a situation that has to do with institutional reorganization?
Right.
Yeah. So what do you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely people out there who are trying to change the laws. More for me, I guess I'm voting with my dollars by not buying meat and dairy and eggs to eat, then I'm, you know, hoping that that has an impact. And I do feel like even though we're a small percentage still, that that percentage has gone up quite a bit since, you know, maybe 2014 or so. That, and you are hearing more references to veganism on TV shows. And sure, they're not always positive, but it's, you know, it's out there. The, it's out there. I think more people are aware of what it is. So even though I have had people occasionally be like, well, what can one person do? But
oh, that's a good one. Yeah, I love
like
that.
You know, I became vegan and now other people are being vegan. When people, I've had people in the past, like when they're thinking about being vegan, they'll contact me because they know I know about that, you know, if they want help with that. And that's been great that people know I'm a resource for that when they're ready to talk about it.
Yeah, I think that's a point that is very important to bring up. You know, what can one person do? Mm-hmm. And would you agree that, yes, we can do a lot. If you just focus on your personal life, you know, if you make changes in your personal life, you are adding to this body of human consciousness that we are. And you're making a change, even if it might seem small and insignificant, it really isn't. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I think that's exactly right. And that, you know, we're moving in a direction as people. And it's just even normalizing it, I think, lets people think about choosing that more or moving toward it. Or, you know, even some people, if they do Meatless Monday or make some kind of movement toward it, whereas maybe they wouldn't have 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Like, we don't have to do, like, you would suggest people that are considering maybe do this basic animal activism or social activism, you might call it as well. Like, they don't have to just become vegan from one day to the next, you know, if it's really difficult for them. Because culturally, you know, if somebody is 50, 60 years old and they've been consuming regular foods for their entire lives, well, it's a little, it can be complicated and difficult for them, right? So you suggest, you know, slow changes, gradual changes, and that is also valuable, right?
Yeah, I mean, coming from a psychology background too, that tends to, for most people, provide a longer change than trying to just do something overnight. To do like an incremental, gradual change where they can get used to it, or, you know, see what feelings come up and then kind of address those or feel through those versus trying to do. And I admire people who do that, who watch, you know, maybe watch a couple documentaries and can change overnight. That wasn't the path I took. And I do think a lot of people can't take that path. So it has to be meeting the people where they are.
And you know what? Before we go into really cool questions, I really just want to go to the basics. Because as you know, I'm sure you've encountered many people that their main concern seems to be, oh, protein. Oh my goodness. Yeah, I would love to be a vegan. I would love to do the right thing and be an awesome human. But where am I going to get my protein from? Why do you say, what do you say to that? I just want to tell people we're not nutritionists, you know. But we know a thing or two. We've been doing this for a while in our own personal lives. And so what do you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, one of the first things I usually say is pretty much all food has some amount of protein in it. And, you know, you don't, and a lot of people are consuming too much protein that their bodies then have to figure out how to deal with and excrete. So that's, you know, extra work for their body to do. And thirdly, there, especially in countries like ours, there's not a protein deficiency. And eating too much meat or foods without fiber, you can have a lot of problems with not getting enough fiber because there's no fiber in meat.
Yeah, and well, I just want to give a couple of examples from my personal life, and you share too, because I think a lot of people just go down to business in that sense. It's like, okay, I would love to be a nice, a good human and do the right thing and do an activism of this level, but how can I protect my health? You know, how can I make sure I'm eating protein and iron? You know, because I worry about that, right? Well, hey, what I can share with you is that there are, like Melissa said, there are tons of protein sources out there, and pretty much everything has protein. Right. If you want to go ahead and discover sources of protein that are completely super healthy for you and also vegan, hey, you've heard about tofu. Do not underestimate the value of tofu, okay? And tofu is a great resource because most of it is organic. I don't know how that came about, but it's like coconut oil. All of it is organic. And we also have things like tempeh. In my personal life, what I'm telling you, and again, I'm not a nutritionist. I tell the audience right now, do not underestimate the enormous value of soybeans and the enormous value of foods like tofu and tempeh, which were designed by Buddhist monks way back when they realized, wait a second, we can't be Buddhist monks and eat meat. We have to come up with something. And they did. Yeah. And they did. And that is in addition to things like kale. Kale has protein. So this is something to remember. Kale is not just a very green leaf that you add to salads or make salads out of. This is a very powerful, powerful food. And you have beans, garbanzo beans, pinto beans, all kinds of beans. And just to name a couple. And of course, you can never, never forget about peanut butter and about nuts, hazelnuts, walnuts, sunflower seeds. These are powerful foods. The way I see it, if it works for squirrels, it works for me. What do you say to that?
Yeah, and I mean, even like broccoli, and which my son loves, and I don't not love it, but like because he loves it so much, sometimes I'm like, enough broccoli already. What a problem to have.
That is awesome. I mean, I got to say, wow, okay.
But also peas, mushrooms are things I'll try to just keep some frozen peas at work, and I'll throw them in when I'm heating up my lunch. And besides protein, they have some iron and vitamin K and, you know, other nutrients. And it's just easy to kind of throw them in there. So, and I do, and I think I want to say about tofu is earlier when I was vegetarian or vegan, I didn't not like tofu, but it was like just okay. But after I had changed my diet for a while, I started craving it more and wanting it. So I think it's important for people to realize that your tastes will change. Your taste buds can change if you change what you're eating over time. And I mean, I think for dairy, that's, I mean, there's other issues with dairy, as you know, it is drug-like in your system too, especially cheese. So besides the taste of it, it's also, you know, creating other good feelings in your system. But if you give it some time, your taste buds and your body will adapt and you'll like it. It's not like you're just begrudgingly eating it. I just came around to thinking, okay, tofu's okay. It has protein. I should eat it, to really enjoying it now. So,
yeah, well, I think tofu, it doesn't taste like anything. It just takes up, takes in whatever sauce you're preparing. Right. You know, it's a very interesting food. And you know, I'm a big fan. I'm always having tofu or tempeh. Like I said, all these examples I gave you before. What about, I want to go back to the issue of factory farms. Mm-hmm. What about when you hear people say, well, okay, humans have been doing this for a long time. By doing this, I mean, you know, hunting animals and consuming them. People will tell you like, oh, indigenous people did that a lot of the time. But indigenous people had massive, what we could call eco-villages.
Right.
Where, if you don't know this, I'm going to tell you, is that indigenous people, the majority of their food was plants.
Right.
And they did hunt animals, but for them, it was a whole thing. It wasn't just about eating. It was definitely about eating, but, you know, preparing for the winter, preparing for the future, and using all parts of the animal to construct other things. And in the case of indigenous people, it was also a spiritual experience, as they didn't consider themselves separate from the animals. So for them, it's like, well, if mountain lions hunt for food, we can too, you know, something like that. So again, you know, people will tell you like humans have been eating animals for their entire time, especially a lot of scientists, you know, they would tell you, they will bring science to the table and tell you, oh, no, humans are supposed to eat meat, otherwise our brains don't develop or something, something of like that. You know, there are many theories about why our brains are the way they are. What do you tell them about that? Because, you know, it's very different. We live in a very different age where people are completely separated from the animals. They don't know. I mean, most people that eat meat would never be able to kill a cow or a pig or not even a chicken.
Right.
And let's be real. They would not be able to do this. They would freak out. They will back down because it's hard to kill. It's right. hard to kill a being, a fellow being with your own hands.
Yes.
What do you say to that?
I have many things to say.
Please do.
Like, one thing I think is indigenous people or hunter-gatherers, yeah, they did not live like we're living now as far as eating meat multiple times a day. I don't, you know, that has gotten out there with the various kinds of diets, I guess, that people think that, but...
And they were not sedentary like we are.
Right.
So there you go.
Right. They yeah, they had to go pick the food and roam around and, yeah, move around more. If you look at like the research done regarding the blue zones, these, you know, these are the communities, I think there's about seven of them in the world where they have the most people who live to 100 and they have better health outcomes. You know, they're more healthy at 100 or in earlier ages or later ages rather than, you know, being alive, but, you know, having all these, you know, illnesses also. And one of the things is they don't eat very much meat. They eat, you know, plant-based, you know, maybe occasional meat. So that is very telling. And that is the world we live in currently, you know, that these blue zones exist.
Mm-hmm.
So those two things just have somehow gotten misrepresented that, like, cavemen ate meat all the time. You know, no, they didn't.
I know, right?
Yeah. And so because of us thinking we have to eat meat all the time, that's how these factory farms have, you know, tried to meet that issue of needing more meat and more meat by cramming animals into smaller and smaller spaces. And even, you know, some diseases can spring out of that. There's just all kinds of issues. And like on my most recent show about how food production impacts our environment, like these factory farms have a lot of problems. You know, they're bad for the environment. We're cutting down the rainforest so that we can have cows to produce more meat. It's just bad on every front, but it is frustrating because it doesn't seem to click still. It's not good for the environment. It's not good for your health. It's, I mean, I guess some people do think it's good for their health, but to be eating like this excessive amount of meat. So it's bad for the animals. It just seems like everywhere you turn around, this is the thing to do, is to get away from eating animals. And on every front, it feels like. Mm-hmm. And I do try to recognize that I'm probably biased, but I don't think I am to the level that it is bad for the environment. And, you know, the person I had on the show is an environmental scientist for almost four decades. So he has the research to show what it's doing. So,
yeah, I mean, it seems there are only negatives.
Right.
I mean, what you just said, exactly. I mean, the rainforest, people don't think about that. The Amazon rainforest, which is in the country of Brazil, it really doesn't belong to Brazil. It belongs to all of us. It's it's part of what makes our planet work. And again, we go back to what we were mentioning. We mentioned before, we have an institutional / governmental problem.
Right.
Where it is the governments that don't think about protection of ecosystems at all. Mm-hmm. You always... And you know, chime in, you know, about this if you know some of it. Like we're always depending on the work of heroes working for nonprofits because it seems that just governments just can't get their stuff together to understand how important, how crucial it is to protect our environment.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. I mean, years ago, I took a week-long seminar on nonprofits, and I found out that in certain other countries, they don't really have like a nonprofit system. Mm. And I can't remember which countries it was, but that was kind of eye-opening to me because the government, you know, had some systems in place and safety nets for people, they didn't need to have this big nonprofit network like we have here to try to help, you know, animals or help people who need help. It was more taken care of. And then also, it's a little bit different note, but from what I understand, like the Canadian government has come out saying like the dairy is not necessary for a healthy diet. Like we have, I'm not sure what iteration we are. You know, there was the food pyramid and the My Plate, but we just, you know, here I have a hard time seeing them ever taking dairy off, but it isn't something that people need. But there's a lot of lobbyists and money and subsidies involved in it. And so here we are.
Yeah, we're just basically dealing with people in enormous position of influence and power who don't seem to care at all about what's important to protect. Mm-hmm. They have no empathy for animals, for fellow beings. They don't seem to have empathy for people either, because people are suffering as well.
Right.
And people, very poor people that live in Brazil near the Amazon rainforest, these people are also kind of being forced to cut down the rainforest so they can have room, so they can make any income.
Right.
Because we live in a world where you need income, where you need money, and you can't get away from that. So we have all these issues that, again, there are no straight answers right now, except that we do have institutional governmental problems that we have to tackle at some point soon. Would you say that because of the massive activism of tons of people the past 10 years, that we live in a new reality, and that now slowly we must see a positive change that could kind of validate the work of activists such as yourself with your actions and your work? This is activism.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think everybody working from the bottom up has helped. I think the pandemic has put things in a different perspective for some people. I think some people have had some aha moments about what's important in life, which, you know, maybe like more of a work-life balance, which could lead to more activism. I know Bernie Sanders has recently been touting a 32-hour work week at the same pay, which I've been doing myself a four-day work week for a while now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that allows me to have more bandwidth and more time and energy to do things like this. When you only have 2 days off and you have other obligations and things, it makes it hard to do any activism because you're just exhausted. Mm-hmm. And I know many other people, like I used to, are working multiple jobs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it does, I think you said earlier, it feels like things are against us. Like, yeah, if we have to work all the time, we're not going to be able to make this bottom up kind of change at the same pace.
Yeah. Yeah. This is very serious. And, you know, I want to ask you something, a really good question right here. And it's at the core of, you know, what it means to be a vegan, what it means to be, you know, because I think that word sometimes is kind of a dirty word for many people. Mm-hmm. What it means to embrace a plant-based diet, mm-hmm. what it means to say no to animal suffering, animal products, to say no to participating in these horrible systems that are completely unnatural and against our true, most innermost, like human principles. Why is it important to protect our fellow beings? In your view, why is it important to protect animals, our fellow beings?
I just have always felt like it is killing is wrong, and then you're putting on top of it how you're treating them, torturing them their whole lives. So I feel very strongly, like, you know, I'm against the death penalty and have been for 20, 25 years. I just am generally strongly against killing, and that applies to animals also. I just don't think it's our, like, we're humans. We can't make that kind of decision. Mm-hmm. We're too imperfect to, that's part of it. We're too imperfect to make a decision to kill a person or an animal. And also, like, it's everybody kind of has, every animal has, we don't have the right to take that away from them, mm-hmm. their life. So,
yeah, and definitely not in the way that we've been doing it. Again, factory farms, which is, I'm sorry to bring it up again. I know it's hard to imagine this, but this is where your meat is coming from. If you're listening and you consume meat products, it doesn't come from a beautiful farm.
No.
Where people love their animals and they give them love, and and they prepare them for transitioning in a way that is nice. No, it's not like that at all.
No, it's and horrific.
It's actually horrifying. And, mm-hmm. and we have, again, this institutional issue where the governmental agencies make it illegal for example, the press
right.
to go in there and take pictures so we know what the heck is going on. We have all these activists from DXC, DXC.
Yeah, Direct Action
Direct Action Everywhere, mm-hmm. yeah. Who really put their lives on the line, you know.
They do.
Sometimes they go to prison or jail for a few months. That's hard.
They're labeled terrorists sometimes.
I know, exactly.
Because they're trying to free animals.
They're trying to expose the truth as well.
Right.
Because, you know, you it's very hard to find pictures of all these different factory farms where all the different animal products like cheese and eggs and meat and
right.
ham and deli and all these things come from, including pet foods as well.
Yeah.
And they don't, you know, they just make it illegal for people to take pictures. Mm-hmm. And so we're dealing with this, you know, and it's I just want to remind you that this is an issue that we have, obviously, in that the work of a few people like you, Melissa, and many others that, you know, just choose to embrace a plant-based diet, just choose to feel for the animals instead of looking the other way. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing. And it's something that we all need. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. It's a delicate balance. But yeah, I wish people would understand more and not act like just because they're cows or chickens that it makes it okay. And especially like you keep reiterating, which is very important, these conditions that they're kept in mm-hmm. is just, you know, unfathomable, I think, to a lot of people. And, you know, in the dark, on top, sitting on top of each other, in their own feces, it's just, you know, being artificially inseminated mm-hmm. against their will. It's just, you know, we could go on and on about how cruel it is.
Mm-hmm. Or having somebody, you know, there's a job position in factory farms where somebody is just going to separate male and female baby chickens.
Yeah, we talked about this on our last
and it's a pretty quick process where they basically separate females from males because mm-hmm. male baby chickens are useless, apparently. Yeah. So you just throw them into a thing where they die right. horribly. And that's their job. And you know, I'm sorry, this is about you, Melissa, but it's about us in general as people that embrace a plant-based diet and this type of basic animal activism. It's something that, you know, it's important to bring up to light is that, well, these things are unnatural and I would argue against our innermost human principles, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, I agree with that. And you can't help but think the people who have that job or slaughtering the animals, like how that's impacting them. And they feel like they have to do it because, like you said earlier, we all have to have some kind of mm-hmm. income. But it is against, yeah, I don't know how they do it. I think they can, you know, I think all of us could become desensitized to anything if we let ourselves. I know as I was growing up and as a young adult, I don't know how many times I was told, you know, not by my family as much, but just other people like, well, you need to toughen up or, you know, kind of buck up. And I kind of always felt like, no, like I don't know how I knew not to, you know, just become desensitized. But and as I became an adult, I kind of could formulate my thoughts around it a little bit more that, yeah, no, mm-hmm. I don't think we do need more desensitized mm-hmm. people. And even though it's emotionally difficult for me at times to be so sensitive to everything, I think it's important that, and you said earlier, Ender, that you think a lot of people are sensitive, but they have whittled it away or become less sensitive because it's mm-hmm. easier to function in this world that way.
Mm-hmm. And I think it happens to all of us if we're not careful. We live in a time where entertainment is at our fingertips. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the past, people didn't have all these different streaming services and things that just all you have to do is sit down and your brain shuts down and you go into an imaginary world. I mean, you see it with young people playing video games for hours and hours and hours because you could, you know, I argue, I guess, that they don't want to face reality. They're just having fun, you know, too. It's one and the other. But yeah, and my next point then would be, can you share with us a few ways to be an activist for our fellow beings, an activist for the animals, you know, besides what I consider the most basic activism, which is choosing to not consume animal products?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of options out there. So if, yeah, like you said, becoming vegan is of course a good way and the maybe a first way, but you can also get involved with vegan organizations, which I think it's very important that you have a social circle who is on the same page with you about that. But then if you have certain talents, like if you get together with an organization, like maybe you can help them with their social media, if that's something you're good with. If you want to volunteer, if you want to be out there on the streets protesting, you can do that. But there are a lot of other ways. I mean, this is my way of being an activist, is this is a passion of mine to have a radio show, and just getting to combine that with my other passion of being vegan was like a great like aha moment for me. And it's nice because I can, you know, I am busy, but I can work it around my time. I don't, sometimes I can't go to certain events that I would like to go to because they're not at a time I can go, or there are, I'm too tired or things like that. So I think people can carve out a niche, you know, if there's something they really enjoy doing, maybe they can volunteer and help and do that for a vegan organization.
And, well, you just reminded me that I have to remind the audience that, hey, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, of course. And this morning, this special radio zine, we are talking to Melissa Lesniak, who is a host and producer of That Vegan Show, which is our only, so far, only vegan-focused show program here at KBOO. And it airs the fourth Friday at 11 a.m. You can find a wonderful archive of all the activism that Melissa does, talking to people in the field, and why is it important to embrace plant-based diets, and why is it important to even expose it to people. You can find it online. Simply go to favorite web browser, kboo.fm/thatvegan show. Just type in That Vegan Show on your favorite web browser, That Vegan Show, KBOO. And again, you know, it's such a pleasure to have you here talking about why is it important to even talk about these things, you know, because of the things that are happening everywhere. Which takes me to one of my last questions for this morning. And it is in your way, because this is a big question and it has many answers. But like, what happened to society? Why do you think people have become so detached from nature?
I think part of it is what I was talking about earlier, is that the demands on us are so much, like so many of us have to work so many hours that when we come home, we just want to relax. And then, as you were just saying, sometimes that relaxing or tuning out for a little while can get out of hand. It's kind of a vicious cycle. I have, like, over the last several years, been trying to myself reconnect with nature. And of course, the Pacific Northwest is a great place to do that, because there's you can just go to a park that's not too far from you, and you're in the forest, basically. Even though it's only a few minutes from your house, you don't have to necessarily drive far away, although there's, of course, plenty of other places. So yeah, I think we just all got used to, we're inside, we're at office buildings. And the whole, like, you know, productivity kind of mentality has really taken root, to even the point where your coworkers may talk behind your back if they think you're not doing enough, or, you know, they don't stay late after work, or they don't do this. And so it just doesn't, our society doesn't really carve out time. Like, I was just thinking, like, why don't, and I know some workplaces let you exercise at work, but, like, why don't more places, you know, let you exercise at work? Because your productivity would probably go up. You'd probably take less sick days because your immunity would be better. Just overall, just like we were talking about with veganism, there's so many positive things, but for some reason we can't have that. I don't know if I have an answer to this. I think we have to, and I think we have, and especially I think the younger generations are really pointing it out to us. Like, we're not going to do this anymore. We're not going to work all these hours. We have to have time for our interests, our passions, our family, our friends.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to give kudos to all the for-profit or non-profit companies that have the hybrid job model.
Yeah.
Because I believe that helps a lot with mental health.
Yes.
You know, when you're able to get, you know, all the work done, you know, basically on a laptop, on a computer, which is the case for
right.
for a lot of jobs. You could say even the majority of them, really. There's a lot of emails to be sent and things yeah. to write down on a computer, you know.
Yeah.
That's one thing that, you know, talking about positive things, you know, that can help people with mental health, you know, just kudos. Kudos to any company such as Kebu that has a hybrid job model.
Yes.
It's what keeps us healthy, I would say.
I've always been surprised there wasn't more of that. I mean, I think that's another thing that the pandemic made us mm-hmm. realize, that people can work at home and be as productive. I'm doing yeah. my little air quotes over mm-hmm. here. But, like when I was working at home, and there's both sides of it, like maybe educators worked at home too long, and, you know, that had some side effects too. But I always wondered, I didn't know if I could work at home. I thought, like, maybe I won't be able to get my work done. But I still had deadlines. I still had meetings. And it really took the edge off. Like, didn't have to go anywhere. I could just stop and make my lunch. I didn't have to worry about having, you know, some kind of lunch at work. And for me, those are, maybe for other people, those aren't as tricky. But I'm not really a morning person. You know, it was just nice to be able to stop and eat my lunch and then go back to work and not be in the commute. And it's kind of confusing to me because, you know, a lot of people are talking about the environment, but then you commute back and forth mm-hmm. to work when I think we knew before the pandemic that you didn't have to, but that kind of pushed us over the edge to really show, like, no, you really don't have to go mm-hmm. into the office every day. Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a wonderful thing to think about, you know, all the things, all the changes that can be done to better our living conditions, you know, mm-hmm. So people can have time to do time and energy
right.
and mental clarity
yes.
to make the right decisions, to do activism, you know, not feel all this pressure to be somewhere for 10 hours and then be so tired that mm-hmm. they don't want to deal with anything else, you know. It's a difficult vicious circle, right?
Right.
Yeah. And do you have any other thoughts and stories that maybe I didn't trigger with my questions that are so important for the community to hear?
I guess it's been great to see veganism grow, like especially like being in St. Louis, even though, of course, it's different here or different in different cities, it's grown a lot there. And I think one thing I've noticed in the last few years is some people are really trying to make some big changes, like that we probably wouldn't even have considered saying out there, you know, like ending factory farming or becoming a vegan city by, you know, such and such year. Like, I think those bigger ideas are out there now that maybe weren't out there in the past. Mm-hmm. And even though it might take a while to get to those, we're not going to get there if the bigger idea is out there. So that's been really great to see.
Yeah, yeah. I also have a positive outlook, you know, to what's coming to us, to mm-hmm. the country and the world. And really keeps me going because I do see it, you know, and I feel bad for so many people. I'm sure you encounter it all the time. That they don't think things are going to get better. You know, they're just stuck, you know, and they,
yeah.
I've had people tell me like, oh, the whales are going to die when there's nothing we can do. All the fish are going to die. If that were to happen, that would be like the end because of, I mean, we're talking about something else right now, but mm-hmm. how ecosystems are all connected.
Right.
You know? So it's not like you can eliminate the whales and everything's going to be okay. There are so many mysterious things that our science just can't explain. It takes me back to one of my last questions today, this morning. I hope this is a great conversation so far. Have you been having a good time here? Being on the other side of the...
Yeah, I'm on the other side. On the other,
yeah. I was going to say on the other side of the microphone, but it's really another microphone altogether. We were talking about, how ecosystems are all connected, you know? And how important it is to embrace a positive outlook. So, with that being said, do you think we're on the right path? And I want to also add the person that when you were little that asked you to toughen up. Mm-hmm. I would say, well, I like that. I like to be toughened up with my path that I chose. Right. I'm not gonna. Nobody's gonna push me around and get me out of my path.
Right.
That's how I see that comment. Thoughts?
Yeah. As far as, I am glad I kind of firm toughened up, like you said, in being vegan. And it doesn't feel like any kind of deprivation to me. It's just something that clicked for me. And it, you know, I'm not like, oh, I can't have that. I'm upset about it. Now, granted, I also live in Portland, which makes it really nice because I can have pretty much whatever I want. But
yay for Portland. Yeah.
But even in other circumstances, it's glad, it feels good to be committed to that. And I guess letting other people know, like I was saying earlier, that your tastes can change, what you crave can change, and it's not about like depriving yourself. It's about being your true self. And like Ender said, we're human and we do feel for animals. And it's more of a pushing that away that is unnatural versus embracing how you really feel about these animals.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're approaching the end of this radio zine, and I just want to add my little two cents about this whole thing. Mm-hmm. Well, I think I've been adding cents like throughout the conversation, but there's something to say about our mainstream scientific fields. Mm-hmm. You know, as much as we all love science, because we all love computers, cars, mm-hmm. phones, bridges, you know, satellites, science has a massively positive place mm-hmm. in our world, you know. But I just want to give my input on science in terms of being able to explain everything. I want to give you my input on this, is that I believe, and I'm pretty certain, quite certain, that science cannot explain everything. It cannot, simply mm-hmm. because we don't have the tools to see, for example, consciousness.
Yeah.
We don't have the tools to see emotions emanating from animals, for example. And you know, when you hear people or scientists saying, oh, humans were supposed to be doing this since time immemorial, you know, that's why humans developed their brains. It was because of the meat and everything. You really have to take these comments to the grain of salt, you know, mm-hmm. like as much as people, you know, you might have enormous respect for Stephen Hawking, for example. Trust me, he doesn't have all the answers. It's impossible. It's impossible. So what do you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times, I mean, I do value science, but I also will end up saying, like, well, let's see what they say about that 20 years from now, because it's, you know, it's evolving and changing. It's not like one answer forever and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just wanted to say that science definitely has a place in our human journey, but by no means it can explain all these kind of detailed aspects of the human journey. Mm-hmm. And that is something I stand firm on. And with this being said, it's been such a wonderful time here. We've been talking to Melissa Lesniak, who is the host and producer of That Vegan Show. That's the title of the show, That Vegan mm-hmm. Show. Broadcast every fourth Friday of the month at 11 a.m. It's our only, so far, only vegan-focused program here at KBOO Community Radio. Very proud to have this program here. It says a lot about who we are. It says a lot about Portland. It says a lot about the society that we're trying to build here with activism and nonprofit ideals. I invite you to also go to Melissa's archives. Just type in, use your favorite web browser and type in that vegan show. You can add the word cable after that. And basically, you know, just go to Melissa's archives and, you know, get to know how important it is to at least participate in these dialogues and how important it is to, again, participate and also, well, listen, you know, hear. Listen, and you know, this morning we were talking about basically animal rights, animal welfare, and how that can have a positive influence in our lives. Would you say that, you know, caring for animals, it actually has a positive effect on our own human journey?
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of us realize that when we're around animals, what a special connection and how healing that can be for all of us.
Well, we could have a part two of this. Thank you so much, Melissa. Any words of wisdom before we go?
Yeah, I just say I think all of us need to keep working on connecting to ourselves and finding our true selves, spending a little bit of time with ourselves, and that's how we can forge a new path forward.
Wonderful. Okay, it's been great. My name is Ender Black, Public Affairs Director at KBOO Community Radio, talking to Melissa Lesniak, host and producer of That Vegan Show. Thank you for listening to KBOO. We're here. Activism 101, always. Thank you.
Thank you, Ender. It's been a wonderful experience being here.